Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And Anthony and I will be right back here on the Mark Steiner Show to talk with Brian Griffiths, who is contributing editor to Red Maryland. And no, that's not a communist journal. And Otis Raleigh, who is president, who is co-founder of Center Maryland. We'll be back to talk about the state of the state in more detail with all of you and hear parts of the speech. But first, let's get this over to WEA traffic and get you home nice and safe.
As a result of the choices that we've made, the choices that we've made together in the face of adversity, the state of our state is stronger than most. And in areas like public education, it is stronger than every state in the union.
That was part of the State of the State address by Governor Martin O'Malley that was had today. And, of course, early in the program, you heard us have five state senators on, three Republicans and two Democrats. We leave enough the odds just a tad for the Republicans. So, of course, that. We're going to continue that conversation. I want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. About the State of the State address. Before we get to that, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering its full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its seven branches or go to mecu.com for more information. I'm here with my co-host and co-conspirator, Anthony McCarthy.
That's what they call us, Mark.
They do, the conspirators.
We've been called worse, though.
And we're joined in studio by Brian Griffiths, who is contributing editor of Red Maryland, and Otis Raleigh, president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, though here tonight in his role as co-founder of Center Maryland.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Good to have you. To talk about this state of the state. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Before we launch into that, could you say to us what you said to us during the break about we were getting all these texts. I'll say it. There, a lot of texts are coming in about this controversy around that Channel 11 has erupted around
Jack Young in his residency, and questions about also we're being inundated with texts about whether or not he plans to give up his job with the state when he assumes the presidency. And it looks like obviously he's a shoo-in for that because Bill Cole has taken his name out of consideration.
But he'll have to by law.
But, yeah, the Ethics Committee ruled back in 2000, I believe, that there's no if, ands, or buts. You have to give up that outside employment. Yeah. So very interesting.
But we'll cover that later
on. Oh, yeah, we'll have to.
We'll be back to talk about that. And Anthony will be here with me until it's time not to be here. 410-319-8888 is going
to
be here. So let's talk a bit about, before we go to the phones, from Robert in Baltimore County. Please, you have an interesting question. We're going to get to that first after we hear both of our guests tell us their instant analysis of what they thought about the state of the state. Why don't we start with Brian Griffiths. Good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Oh, great to be here. I thought it was very appropriate, and I think the Senate caucus and I both kind of came up with the same idea, that it was very appropriate that the speech was on Groundhog Day, because it's the same stuff we've been hearing from the governor over and over and over again. And sometimes I think we'd be better off with a squirrel at the wheel. But be that as it may, a lot of what the governor talked about was creating job growth, which is a very important thing, obviously, with so many middle and working class Marylanders out of work. The thing that really sticks in my craw is the fact that we've had 3 years of administration policies that have created this situation where we've had negative job growth, where we've had higher tax rates, higher the sales tax has gone up, higher business taxes, higher income taxes. And that negative business climate has forced a lot of people out of the state, both potential employees and potential employers. I mean, I think the happiest people in the world that Martin O'Malley is governor are the folks in Fairfax County, Virginia. So many tech jobs are fleeing Montgomery County to set up shop in Fairfax County. It's really helping. It's really helping Virginia's job situation grow. So I think a lot of what the governor's focus on today is very much too little, too late, particularly with his focus on jobs.
Otis Raleigh.
I thought the speech was a good one, particularly the focus in on jobs and our economy. I think it's important though to note. Well, I mean, with all due respect, just some of what was said was just not factually accurate. And just in terms of the reality is, though, that the budgets that have been submitted, particularly in under the current administration, has been less than what we had seen in the past. Particularly the last budget was the first time, I think, in decades that a budget kind of came in lower than it had been the previous year. So I think we're not getting we don't currently have an administration who is trying to spend. I think there's one point. The other point is we have to look at and he mentioned this and the governor mentioned this in his speech that compared to other states, particularly in the sad reality of the national and international kind of global meltdown as it relates to economies. Maryland has been doing very, very well. And I mean, it is easy to say I look good right now when I have, you know, if I have pants on and you have shorts on and to say, well, look, you know, at least my pants are long when we all need snowsuits. But the reality is, you know, at least we have pants on right now. And I think what one part of his speech, he said, in times of great adversity, we don't make excuses. We make progress. At least as from my perspective, I think it's important that we push that agenda a little harder, that he pushes it harder and that the legislature pushes it harder. And that only gets done if we kind of take the gloves off as it relates to spending and as it relates to to cuts. And that involves, and I mentioned this to you before, Mark, that involves really looking at the 66% of the budget that's pretty much mandated as it relates to formulas, where governor, whether Republican or Democrat, have their hands tied. And so the delegates and senators were elected to do a job, right, as it relates to controlling the purse strings piece. And so how about, you know, we actually look at that full budget, not just the small piece that I think he's doing a yeoman's job on, but looking at the full budget and what we can do, just as I have to do and all of us have to do as it relates to our businesses and our homes, looking at both the mandated as well as the kind of discretionary spending.
Well, I would definitely agree about looking at the full budget, because I think there's a lot of mandated spending that we really need to go back and review. You know, as you said, a lot of the budget is tied up, and I do agree with that point. Two points, though, that I definitely take issue with. One, you talked about the budget being a negative budget growth for this year, particularly as it relates to the Spending Affordability Committee. I think that's an artificial number to look at when you consider how much increase we've seen in discretionary spending over the first 3 years of the O'Malley administration. Second off, and this actually is my favorite line of the speech, is that in times of great adversity, we don't make excuses, we make progress. And we can look back over the first 3 years of the O'Malley administration, and see a full fiesta of times in which the Ehrlich administration has been blamed for all of the state's ills. So I think that the governor is being I don't want to use that word, but I think he's being disingenuous when he says that he's not making excuses, because I think he's making a lot of excuses. He blamed the Ehrlich administration for the for a lot of his spending shortfalls and the need to increase taxes. He blamed the Bush administration for the help that he wasn't getting from Washington. I mean, you could argue that Martin O'Malley's middle name has been excuses during the first 3 years of his administration.
I want to ask both you, Brian and Otis, about deficits. I mean, we really have a lot of talk in the governor's speech. There were several times he mentioned the Recovery Act and the stimulus dollars that came to the state of Maryland, and how they've been – this administration has been very good stewards of those dollars and helping maintain jobs, helping stave off some foreclosures, helping to promote BRAC and other things. Where do we see Republicans participating in these conversations about what we're going to do when it comes to the deficit? A lot of finger pointing. And when you're a small minority, I understand that you got to rattle a lot of pots and pans to get attention. But it doesn't seem like it's very easy to point and talk about deficit spending. But you don't seem to the Republican caucus doesn't seem to be offering any kind of alternative to what we have to do with these stimulus dollars.
Well, the Republican caucus has actually a number. I've spoken with Senator Kittleman, with Delegate O'Donnell, and they have a number of recommendations. I don't have a list handy here right now. But it's very – there's two – points regarding that. First off, the governor does not exactly have Senator Kittleman or Delegate O'Donnell on his Christmas card list. So it's not like there's a lot of interaction between the minority leadership of the administration when it comes to the budget. Second off, you know, the Republicans time and time again, if you go back to the Stoltzfus Amendment a couple of years ago, that really would have put the kibosh on a lot of the spending increases that we've seen over the years. And, you know, all of that is public record. The amendments that Senator Stoltzfus, Senator Kittleman, Delegate Shank, Delegate O'Donnell, all of the Republican fiscal leaders have introduced over the years that have been shot down bipartisan party line votes. You know, there are ideas out there. It's not just the bloggerati out here, you know, raising hell trying to get our message across. There really are good ideas coming from the Republican caucus, but the blame, you know, has to wind up with the administration and the Democratic majority, because the Republican minority is, by the numbers game, just being shouted down.
Otis Rowley, Senator Pugh said, I want to ask him to respond to that, but Senator Pugh said in the first segment we had, bring some ideas to the table. Republicans, it's easy to point the finger, but bring something to the table so we can work together.
And I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think we have to be careful, though. We can't in one voice say, you know, that the governor spends too much of his time kind of making excuses and blaming people, and then, in within 2 minutes' time, just blaming the governor and blaming the Democrats, because then you become what you are trying to change. And I think what the reality is, I'm exhausted from the partisan playing. I'm exhausted. This is part of the reason why Center Maryland was formed, so that we can kind of get the word out. That's why I was so proud of you, Mark, when we had Republican and Democratic senators on your show, because I think I do agree that the solutions are out there. I do agree that they're not here. And as someone who's often been trying to push the kind of the transit and transportation agenda that is different from the majority thinking on it, I understand how frustrating that can be. But you need to put those solutions out there. Someone once said, you know, people use statistics. Unfortunately, people use statistics the way a drunk man uses a pole for support instead of illumination, right? And I think if we change the conversation, instead of every thing beginning with Bush did this, or Ehrlich did this, or O'Malley did that, but instead said, here, as the Republican Party, these are the solutions that we think we need to move forward with. And given the technological advances, given open media sources such as this show and Anthony McCarthy's show and others, I think we can start getting that out there. And that's why Senator Maryland's one. We want to hear both sides. Cut the rhetoric and kind of the preaching on both sides, and come with clear solutions in terms of where do we make necessary cuts? Where can we have revenue enhancements? And revenue enhancements don't necessarily have to mean tax increases. Where do you make investments so that you increase revenue in terms of creating jobs and drawing large businesses and encouraging and strengthening small businesses? That's what I want to hear as a citizen of Maryland. I don't want to pay another tax, not on anything, period. And I know there are those who disagree with me, but I want others to do, particularly those who I have elected. I want them to make those difficult decisions that I've had to make, and that as someone heading a nonprofit, as someone who heads a household, difficult decisions, and treat us like intelligent citizens, and just present your arguments as opposed to just playing the political games.
Well, let me open some thoughts here, but we're going to play a clip. Before we get to that clip, I want to encourage our callers to call back at 410-319-8888. Some of you have called in, and we didn't get to you fast enough, so we want to hear your thoughts, so call back. And we'll get you in right away at 410-319-8888. You just heard Otis Rowley, who's president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. He's here in his capacity as co-founder of Central Maryland, a new Democratic website on the web. And Brian, that takes a more centrist position in that world. Brian Griffiths is the contributing editor of Red Maryland, another blog site here in Maryland that takes a Republican perspective. Anthony McCarthy, my co-host, is with us as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I'm Mark Steiner, and we're going to hear this clip and then go right to the phone. So, folks, see you calling in. We're going to get right to those calls, 410-319-8888. Let's hear this small portion of Governor Martin O'Malley's speech, and we'll talk about it.
I want to share with you a brief excerpt from a letter not unlike the letters that all of you are receiving yourselves. This one from a woman named Martha, who writes, "Times are hard and things are tight. I'm living on the edge. My rent for my apartment is 1 month behind. My phone and internet service is scheduled to be cut off. I've been trying to find employment, and I am 53 years old. I never thought that I would be going through this at this point in my life.
Now, you know, we talk about not raising taxes, and we talk about all the things we don't want to do here in the state of Maryland. We're not really wrestling, I think, in many ways with a huge deficit that we are facing in outlying years. This country's not dealing with, nor is the state really, in a very serious way. But what do you say to a woman like Martha? What do you say to the tens of thousands of Marthas in the state of Maryland, if not more? If some people say it's closer to hundreds of thousands in the state of Maryland, who are losing everything they have because of mortgage crisis, because of health care insurance, which is where most people are losing their homes from, and all the rest of the issues. And so we're saying, okay, let's not raise taxes. Let's cut your pensions. Let's take away this. Let's take away that. Talk to those people.
Brian?
I don't think necessarily – I mean, as far as pension goes, I mean, and you know, pensions are kind of a different animal, particularly when it comes to pensions that are already existing. The state of Maryland has made a commitment to employees to receive a pension. If we can examine new pensions as we're going forward, that's a different animal. But the state, the commitments that the state of Maryland has made, you know, that's one thing, and we need to be able to honor those commitments. What the real message we need to be getting out to folks is that government is not designed to be a handout. It's designed to be a hand up. And what we mean that is by empowering the individual to allow them greater sense of opportunity. Martha's story is a terrible story. I mean, and I would not wish that upon any person in my life. But the role of government is not to be the babysitter of everybody. And it's kind of a harsh statement when you say it like that. But we as leaders need to be empowering people, not empowering government for the people.
So the government says today nothing to the people who are losing their homes in the state of Maryland?
Oh, I think the government has at least should have a lot to say to those people, particularly because we are, or at least should be, the government. These are citizens who have, you know, who have come to a conclusion that they can best serve their sisters and brothers, their friends, in elected office. But they should be like us. And so there's a responsibility there, not to babysit, but to help define solutions. And that does mean, you know, eliminating any legislation or regulations that prevent kind of progressive and positive economic growth. It means creating a tax structure that does not hinder and hurt the everyday citizens, as well as small businesses, and an environment that encourages corporations to come to our state, as opposed to fleeing. And so, I think if our government does those things, understands their job as it relates to education, public safety, and support of and encouragement of economic development, then we would have. We would be able to get the new businesses and new jobs that are going to help people like Martha to help her way herself out of the current situation that she's in.
I'm going to come back to this issue and also Anthony McCarthy and him leap into here with all of his questions. But let me go to the phones. I promise 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark and Jess. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
I listened to your conversation, and basically, I feel like there are a lot of simple remedies you know, for our state income. Number one, I feel like, you know, there should be some type of a statewide moratorium on taxes for at least the next 4 or 5 years. From all projections, from what I've understood from CNN, Newsweek, and so on, things are going to get a lot more worse if they get better. You know, now you're talking to a guy who I've been teaching now for like 12 years, got a master's degree and so on. So I'm an average, but at the same time, fairly well-informed citizen. But I feel like there are so many things that inhibit our growth as a state. For one, for example, I think that there was a program I recall in Baltimore City growing up as a kid where so there was something called a dollar program, a dollar house program, mm-hmm. if I'm not
right.
I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
I think that this would be the opportune time to kind of, you know, reinvigorate a program like that, because what can happen is you could take all these renters that are in Baltimore and somehow create a stronger tax base just by, you know, increasing incentives for builders to kind of, like, for the most part, you know, make it easier for people to become homeowners. I know that my life substantially changed when I became a homeowner as opposed to a renter. And I don't think you need to have, you know, $100,000 in the bank to become a homeowner. But at the same time, everything must be on a scale basis. There are so many decrepit homes in Baltimore City. I've seen blocks and blocks and blocks along Pennsylvania Avenue, Greenmount, and so on.
Right.
All these absentee, you know, slumlords. They're probably paying taxes, and I'm assuming that they are. But those houses could easily house a family. And you could probably get some modicum of a tax base from that family. Another thing we could do. Hello?
No, go ahead. Then we have to go back to our guest here. Let me throw your other idea out.
Well, I mean, I have a few other ideas.
Yeah, but we only have so much time, so.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, go ahead then. No,
give me a couple of the others, but just, you know, just give them kind of quickly. What are they?
I think that, first of all, I think that in times like this, and very adverse times like this, I think that the state needs to be even more progressive. And I think outside the box. One of the things I think the state needs to do, honestly, is that we seriously need to consider a barter system, a state-to-state barter system, whereby, you know, Maryland is a state where, so we have a lot of natural resources. Why can't we barter with other states, you know, a barter system? That would create some type of revenue right there with the state, not to mention being more progressive. I'm in favor of, you know, legalizing gay marriage, although I myself am not a follower of the alternative lifestyle. But I think that legalizing gay marriage, And not only that, but becoming a leader in that situation, where so it's going to promote a lot of people in that lifestyle to come to the state of Maryland. A lot of people in that lifestyle have a tendency to be educated. They're tax-paying citizens, and that could be a boon to this local state.
All right, and give us a third one, then we'll move on. Let our guests kind of comment on these.
And the third one, which you guys will probably laugh about, but
no, go what?
I'm serious. I'm telling you, there was a survey about a week ago on legalizing medicinal marijuana. I think that should be considered also. And I don't mean legalize for every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but seriously legalize. I think that more progressive acts need to take place. And in desperate times, you got to think outside the box. Otherwise,
we're going to be a failure. Robert, I think you're a very creative thinker. And I'm going to encourage you. There's a book I want you to tell you to read. And the book is called Everything I Want to Do is Illegal by Joel Salatin, Salatin. When you talk about the barter system, we're going to have him on the air with us soon. He's a really interesting out-of-the-box thinker, a farmer from Virginia, who has some really interesting ideas. So read that book and get ready for that discussion, because I think you'll enjoy it. The number here is 410-319-8888. Otis, you wanted to say something about the dollar houses, and we'll go around here.
Just the dollar, what people forget about the era of the dollar houses was that the federal government stepped in with an enormous amount of resources as it relates to UDAG funding. And I think it was Urban Development Assistance Grants or something like that. And so the city was able to be very creative as it relates to giving homes away through a lottery system for a dollar, because coupled with that were loans and grants. They were forgivable loans for the most part, and some very low interest grants that allowed people then to get those houses for a dollar and then fix them and maintain them. And so, unfortunately, there are a number of there are thousands of vacant structures in the city of Baltimore that tomorrow the city could give to citizens for a dollar. But unfortunately, many of those structures will require rehab work that citizen then would not be able to get the funds up to pay for that to be done. And so there was a partnership, but that was back when, you know, the federal government actually understood that we had cities, and so there were certain policies in place that helped to invest in those cities. And hopefully one day we will return to that reality.
Before we turn to Anthony, I'll let you jump in on that as well. So, I mean, that's one area, Brian Griffiths, where we wouldn't have Fells Point or many other neighborhoods we have in the city if we didn't have federal dollars to be funneled into the city, so individuals like me and you and you and you and you and the rest could buy these houses and rehab them.
You have to think about it from this perspective too. When you talk about a lot of the stimulus money, you talk about a lot of federal spending, it's just throwing money at problems. When you talk about the dollar house program, this is something that's clearly worked. I mean, we're not – Republicans, in and of themselves, are not against spending for the sake of spending. I mean, we're not against it for the sake of being against it. We're against throwing good money after bad. So you know, you talk about the dollar house program. It's something that would definitely need to be considered, because it's something that promotes the development of cities. It promotes the entrepreneurial spirit. It promotes home ownership, which promotes good citizenship. To hit back on one of his other points too about the tax moratorium, man, you know, I think we need to go further. You know, I think we can start by rolling back the sales tax to 5% and really kind of start to stimulate some of the economic growth. As far as gay marriage and medicinal marijuana stimulating the economy, They may stimulate something. I don't know about the economy, but I mean that's but you guys may, this may throw you off a little bit. You know, both of these make sense for Maryland. Gay marriage is something that Republicans should embrace because it's a small government family value, and I don't understand why so many Republicans are against it. As far as an economic value goes, I have no idea, you know, if that is going to bring tourism or bring dollars to the state or not. But you know, ideas like this, and Robert, you made a very good point about this being outside the box thinking. When you talk about economic times like this, you know, and the budget deficits and the things that we face as a society, out of the box thinking is what we need.
We are about to take a very brief break and come right back. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on where the state should go. We'll come back with a clip from the governor's speech and wrestle with that. And we do want to hear your ideas about that. And we did, last caller, spoke a great deal. We'll let you do the same. 410-319-8888. Otis Raleigh is a Democrat. He's in the studio. Brian Griffiths, he's not a Democrat, Republican, I would imagine. He's in the studio. Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner are here behind the mics talking with you all. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back.
There's another kind of work which we must do as a people. It is not the work of our hands or of our heads, but of our hearts. For there is a dark thing that has penetrated deep into our collective soul, a thing that has to be recognized, seen for what it is, and rejected by all of us. It is the debilitating and un-American idea that our children will not enjoy a better quality of life than we have, that somehow we are now destined to decline, to backslide, to fail. With every fiber of my being, I reject this notion. I find it utterly unacceptable, and so do the generations ahead of ours. This recession will end. Our journey is not over, and our best days are still in front of us if we make it so.
An impassioned speech at times by Governor Martin O'Malley. It's Anthony McCarthy here with us, of course, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAN, and co-host in this show. Brian Griffiths is with us in the studio, contributing editor of Red Maryland. Otis Raleigh, co-founder of Center Maryland, and president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Before we jump into discussion, I want to remind you all to join us Thursday night. Join Healthcare for the Homeless for the sweetest night in town. The 19th Annual Chocolate Affair, set up for more than 50 of Baltimore's best restaurants, caterers, chocolatiers, while raising the resources and awareness necessary to end homelessness. The Chocolate Affair is Thursday, February the 4th, from 6 to 9:30 p.m. at M&T Bank Stadium. Tickets and more information are available at chocolateaffair.org. And join us there for a little bit of chocolate. I might have some myself. 410-319-8888. So we just heard Governor Martin O'Malley in that take. It was an impassioned piece. But the question is, and part of what I think the leaders have to do now is what they're not doing, is inspiring people to do something. But what are people to do? I mean, in the kind of sacrifices people have to make this work. You know, we talk, as we have here a moment ago, about, maybe we'll get back to kind of the medical marijuana thing. I think that's going to be a really interesting battle in the state legislature coming up. But we keep saying, and both of you kind of touted it as well a bit, that government is not the solution. Well, then what is? You keep saying, Otis, no more taxes. I don't want to say more taxes in the state of Maryland. And you are saying over here, Brian Griffiths, you know, that government is not the solution. Well, tell me what is then? I mean, if we didn't have government money, we'd have no highway system. If we didn't have government money, there'd be no railroads in the United States of America. We talk about all the great industrialists putting all their money in railroads in America. Well, the government gave them the land, and the government helped pay for those railroads, which is why we have the railroad system. So what does the government do? Just kind of pack up its bag and go away?
No. Well, at least from my perspective, as though this is it's not – I personally don't feel that government is the solution. I think that they are part of the solution. We can't look at government as the messiah and that they're going to, you know, kind of save us all from ourselves. I think the solution is really the people of Maryland. The solution for Baltimore are the people of Baltimore, the diverse – you know, the diverse state that we have. The rich kind of resources that we have in terms of economic strength, educational strength, cultural strength, the people need to be involved in the solution. And so you don't get to that solution by, for example, and not to lay blame, but, you know, God forbid with the during what happened at 9/11, the immediate thing, the president, when we were willing to do anything, you know, for our country, the president tells us to go shopping, right? I think what we need here is everyone gets it. We're in dire straits. And so government's role here is really to serve as a leader, to be part of the solution. So say, look, we're not going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And this is why we're not going to be able to do those things. I need your help. I need you to sacrifice. Just like you're not going on family vacations this year because your income is a little lower. The state of Maryland can't do X, Y, and Z because our income is lower. But you know what? They don't do that because that would be treating you and I like an intelligent individual. You know, that instead we get caught up in whether it's emotional speeches or emotional rhetoric. Instead of just coming to the core issues, there are certain things you cannot cut. You know, I think we're number one in education for a reason, right? And there's just, you know, so there's certain public safety. There's certain things which I get it in terms of that have to be held harmless because if you don't make those investments, you end up hurting. And we get that too personally and in our businesses at home. But I when I say government is not the solution, I don't mean that we need to shut down government, that we need the end of government. I think government needs to treat us like the partners that we're supposed to be in what helped form this republic. And you can't talk about those railroads without talking about the people that built those railroads. You know, I mean, we can't talk about this country without the people who helped to build those, build our cities, build the, and produce in terms of the farms. We need to be part of the solution, and in order to be part of the solution, we need to be treated like equals.
I think part of the problem, though, is and there is this, and I notice I think you made it a little bit, kind of let it seep into your comments a little bit, is that there is this presumption that only the people should sacrifice. Government is never expected to sacrifice, and what I mean by that is during this time, look at, you know, for example, Maryland, where we've seen the income tax hike, we've seen the sales tax hike, while government continues to grow. We have seen government continue to grow, explode at the federal level, and that's not a Republican or a Democratic problem because Republicans in the last decade were just as bad at expanding the government as Democrats ever were.
Amen.
it comes back to we need to put more ability for people to determine their own fates back with their people. We need to, and I hate to go on a libertarian bent here, to legalize freedom.
No, you don't.
Touche. You know, we need to make it easier for people to keep the money that they bring in. Make it easier for people to create jobs. Make it easier for people to live their lives. Government, you know, Ronald Reagan said government is not, you know, the solution. Government's the problem. And I think we see a lot of that. A lot of the problems that we see are caused by government. Look, for example, at General Motors. General Motors continues to, you know, flounder because of all the money that's been influx into government. Ford, however, just made a profit on the private sector.
Well, hold on. I mean, there's a lot of things that you may be able to to blame on the government, but I don't think General Motors. I think if you're making the point that mismanagement, whether that's mismanagement in the public sector, also known as government, or mismanagement in the private sector, also known as General Motors, has resulted in the problems that we have, that's fair. But I don't think I don't think government created the problems that we have as it relates to the auto industry. I think the auto industry sitting on their hands and not being creative and innovative and instead investing and reinvesting in stuff that creating a market instead of being responsive to the market helped to create the drama that we're in right now. But I agree with you on the point that government does need to take a stand in terms of recognizing where they need to sacrifice and where they need to make cuts. My only point is that I think the people need to be part of that process and making a decision as to where they can and would and should cut. And they will be willing to do that if they were treated like intelligent individuals by getting enough information, which we try to give at www.centermaryland.org.
Now, I do want to ask you, Brian, because I certainly understand where you're coming from, and at the risk of seeming like I'm joining Otis and correcting you, I'm very concerned when we start talking about government being part of the problem, because if we're looking at the national level, and you quoted Reagan, I can see exactly what you're talking about. But here in the state of Maryland, where there are a lot of protocols in place to really rein in spending, whether we are talking about taxes, whether we're talking about fees that Governor Ehrlich became famous for during his term, a lot of raising of fees at the MVA on our college campuses and other things. And I'm not saying that was necessarily wrong. I'm just saying we can't seem to lump in how we manage not only our budget but our social priorities in the state of Maryland with how they do it on the federal level. Would you agree with that? That there is more discipline by Democrats and Republicans in the state of Maryland than there are maybe on the national level.
Well, there's more discipline because there has to be, because there's a constitutional amendment saying we have a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. Just because that budget is required to be balanced doesn't mean that we do not see increases in spending over time with an increase in revenues through higher taxes or through higher fees. And I will grant you that. The question becomes this. When do we see the law of diminishing returns? When does our insistence on increasing revenues when does that start diminishing the returns as we continue to increase the size of government? We've already seen, and Governor O'Malley seemed a little surprised by this, but a lot of people, even Comptroller Francho, said this was going to happen, that as we've increased taxes, our revenue is balancing, is evening out or diminishing a little bit. We are projecting spending over time using current revenue projections and the revenue projections that are saying that we're going to hit this mark, when a lot of revenue projections that are outside of Spending Affordability Committee are saying that, you know, we will not meet those projections because of the Laffer curve, the law of diminishing returns. As you increase taxes, you decrease revenues.
Well, not everybody agrees with the Laffer curve. Let's be clear about that. Yeah. There's a lot of people who don't think that curve is not really relevant to the reality of economics. There's a huge debate about that. Let me just throw that on the table. Well, go ahead.
Understood. we will agree to disagree.
I didn't say I agree to disagree. I'm just saying that it's not like a fact of life. The Laffer curve is not a fact of life.
That being said, you know, there is a responsibility to rein in that spending. We cannot just assume that that government should grow perpetually for the sake of growing government. And we need to figure out where the line is. Of course, me as a conservative Republican says, you know, you want to see where the line is, look behind you. We passed it a long time ago. but we need to do what's right to maintain a business environment where we don't lose additional businesses, and what makes it appealing to grow more business.
Let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. First two callers are Mike and Alexis. We're going to come to you both one at a time. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Welcome.
What I'm calling about is you asked both of the guests, you know, what is the solution? Because they both say, well, government is not the solution. And you ask them, well, specifically, what is the solution if it's not government? And what I heard was a bunch of vague answers, and it went right back to talking about what government shouldn't be doing.
Okay.
And, you know, you can talk very eloquently and say all the nice words and all of that, but what specifically do they believe could be done? Just putting money in people's hands and letting people hold on to their money, that doesn't necessarily do anything.
What do you think, before they answer, what do you think is the solution?
I don't know what the solution is. Okay. I didn't call about my...
No. I was just curious. You're right.
Yeah, I want to know because I constantly hear people, and it's both sides. I'm an independent. It's both sides. You mm-hmm. hear Republicans, you hear Democrats, and it's all about the party and what shouldn't be happening, what shouldn't be happening. What I want to hear from you individuals is specifically... what should be done?
Hmm. Otis, you ready? Look like you're ready to roll here. Go ahead.
Oh, well, first of all, Mike, I do want to apologize if I seemed vague at any point. Often I get criticized because I go into a little bit too much detail. So let me say specifically what I think needs to be done is that, number one, I think the state government needs to look at the 66% of their budget that is mandated through mandates and formulas and have a full kind of zero-based budgeting approach and as it relates to all spending, everything. And make cuts where appropriate, whether that be whether it be in housing, whether it be in education, whether it be in health, wherever is necessary, make the necessary cuts. I think that's one piece. I think simultaneously, as you're doing that, because you're doing zero-based budgeting, you look at where you invest because you don't think of the short term. Okay, well, how do I balance the budget today? But you think of how do I make sure that revenues are coming in and increasing. So you look at opportunities to invest in small business. Obviously, I'm slightly biased, but I think you invest in transit and transportation. You make sure that people can get to jobs and get to opportunities to get to educational opportunities, et cetera. We know that there is, you know, that you get more of a return on investment in terms of jobs in transit than you do roads, but that does not mean you don't also invest in roads. You clearly invest in education because you clearly see the return on investment as it relates to education. So I think that's from my perspective, you make cuts that are strategic, but you have to look at your full budget in making those cuts and throwing out kind of the mandates and requirements that currently exist. And you at the same time, you make the key investments in education, in infrastructure, so that your state can continue to grow and prosper.
Well, and notice that I definitely agree on zero-based budgeting, particularly as it comes to mandates and formulas, and we talked about that earlier. One of the things that's really killing a lot of our spending, particularly not necessarily at the state level but the county level, is what's called maintenance of effort funding, where the states or the counties are required to spend at minimum what they spent the year before on education, even if there is no necessary reason for them to do so. But you got to go back and look about how government operates. One of the things that's always stuck in my craw as far as government spending is that there's something called the Selinger formula, which is how money gets distributed to private, not public, private higher education institutions here in the state of Maryland. That's a $65 million outlay that goes to private schools. Why is the state of Maryland subsidizing private schools?
Being cut by $22 million this year.
Still, but why is it happening? I mean, you have public institutions which need the money, which are raising tuition rates. Mm-hmm. Why is that money being outlaid?
I would argue that that's more of an economic development investment than an education investment, that the colleges and universities, both public and private, actually contribute in the billions of dollars as it relates to
– Well, why couldn't you make the same argument then that they should give that money to St. Catherine's School for Girls and Friends School?
I think some people could.
Right. I mean, that's my point. I mean, it's you're either a public school or you're a private school. You can't have it both ways. I mean, that's just.
But you could see it as an investment. Right. When we talk about the fact that these universities, private universities, contribute and drive a lot of economic development, not only for the state, but really for those localities and regions that could be used for a whole lot of. The infrastructure things that Otis talked about.
But the question is the money that's being spent in Selinger funds? And this is I went to
one
of the private schools. I went to Western Maryland. I know. Is that an appropriate investment of our dollars? I'm one, and don't jump across the table at me, Otis. I'm one for
Otis is not a jumper.
I'm one for looking at privatizing a lot of things. We've already seen the privatization of operations at the Seagirt Marine Terminal. I want to look at privatizing public transportation. I'd love to sell off a lot of the Stadium Authority assets. There's no reason for the state of Maryland to operate. To operate at a loss these facilities. I mean, you need to look at the basic role of government and see where has government gone too far, and can we have a cost savings if we either sell or privatize these assets?
Okay, was anyone else here in the continental United States – I'm sorry, in the world when we saw the private sector do very poorly as it relates to managing their resources, which helped to create – the global recession. So I find it funny because some of the hardest workers that I've ever met were on the public side. I've seen people who bust their tail making very little money for the citizens of Baltimore. And I've also seen some people get filthy rich while screwing up the state national economy on the private side. So I don't think the solution, I don't think the private side is the solution, the public side is wrong, or vice versa. I think everybody in la-di-da-di, everybody someone says all the time, everyone needs to just manage their resources properly and do what's right as it relates to an investment of those dollars that's being spent.
Let me get to the phone so I should come right back, Brian. 410-319-8888. Alexis, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Alexis. Alexis.
I'm truly enjoying the conversation,
good,
as always.
Thank you.
My comment, I have to agree with, I think it's Otis from Central Maryland. I would like to see more responsibility put in the hands of the citizens of Maryland, the citizens of the United States in general. But I think sometimes what happens, and the topic has been broached from time to time in other conversations, but I don't think we've really delved very hard into how much special interest plays a role in the government. And there's mm-hmm. times when the voice of individual citizens isn't necessarily heard over the dollars of special interest. And that's just my comment. Mm. Thanks for the time.
No, Alexis, I mean to throw this in here, let our guest comment on it. I think that's part of the problem with all the legislation in Congress now, not just the State House. I mean, whether it's what happened to health care insurance and the power of the insurance and health care lobby, what is happening with not having oversight over banking, the same kind of stuff is going on. It happens here in Annapolis. What is good for the Bay is not good for developers, so or large farming. And so we are stuck with that. So, I mean, how do you control?
Well, I think this is one reason why we've seen this year the Open Government Act sponsored by Delegate Miser from Montgomery County. You got 79 co-sponsors, bipartisan support, both houses, both chambers. One way to really open up the proceedings of Annapolis. I think that more sunshine, sunshine is a disinfectant, as they like to say. And I think the more we open up the inner workings of government, the more we'll be able to see and be able to deal with those special interests.
I think the more you look at organizations like the Open Society Institute of Baltimore and Safe and Sound, they're doing just that. They're trying to get attention to and some of the hypocrisy as it relates to the investment of our dollars. I mean, I don't know this number exactly, so please bear with me. But hypothetically, if it costs $40,000 to house a nonviolent offender, and you realize that for $20,000, and once again, if you realize for $20,000 that you could actually put them in an apprenticeship program, or that you could invest in their education or whatever, all of us would say, well, do you go with the $20,000 if they're a nonviolent offender? They just need a job. It's a great social solution. It's a job, right? But instead, we will spend the $40,000 on the jail cell. And so I think that, to Alexis's point, the more the citizens are involved, we went to the citizens about whether or not we should have slots. Okay. We thought enough of the citizens that we could ask them whether we should gamble or not. Couldn't we go to our citizens maybe and have a conversation about, does it make more sense for me to educate or to put in jail? Does it make more sense for us does it make more sense for us to invest in our current workforce, particularly in the city of Baltimore? Or to create this, by and by, through and through, one day you'll have a great pension that is bankrupting us. I think it would end up being cheaper if we paid more in terms of education for our current citizenry, if we did more in terms of really investing in our current workforce than investing, talking about the future investment in terms of pension programs.
Let me go back to the phones. And what you're saying, Otis, is something that I have pushed, Anthony has pushed, all of our elected leaders to talk about. If these other solutions are working, they cost less, why are we not doing it? Why is it taking us so long to reform the hundreds of millions of dollars we spend in our state prisons and juvenile systems instead of doing it the smart way and maybe getting ourselves into a different place?
And that's a place, Mark, where both Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, and liberals could really talk about what works, the outcomes that we're all talking about, and how we change people's lives. And it really should be. We hear a lot of politicians talk about people. It really should be about the best interests of people. I'm sorry. Off the high horse.
I think Pipkin and Pinsky could get together on that one.
I do, too.
410-319-8888. Kevin, you're on the air.
Yeah, to your guest, Mark.
Welcome.
This thing that in the major counties, right, and my family's been there since the 1700s and 1800s, I noticed that from Baltimore City to Montgomery County to the Eastern Shore, these nonprofits have surged out of hand. like the universities, and they're not paying no revenue. You almost got a million nonprofit people, even in the schools and everything, and there's no revenue coming from these nonprofits, which the government, the people down in Annapolis, let get out of hand. My other point is that when a person goes to buy a home, and the settlement people are there, the lawyer people are there, the lawyers are there, nobody is telling these people what to look for as far as interest rates. And in the state of Maryland, by law, these banks got away with charging people up to 24 to 20% interest, because the Maryland state law is 24%. So if you could have got, and then what happened was when the mortgage companies didn't want to do that, they went out and sold the loans to somebody else. So they had two insurance policies on the loans. And the government knew about this, and they stood by Mark, and nothing got done. Now we had this total chaos that's going to take us another 6 or 7 years to get out of. And that's my, let me see what your callers had to say about that.
That's some really two good points. I mean, one of the questions you raised, first, we only have a couple minutes left, but what you raised about nonprofits, there are a lot of people who question the size of some of the more gigantic nonprofits that act more like profit-making institutions.
And their status, that's right.
And their status and what they pay or don't pay on taxes. And the same with, I'll throw this out here, another show, say about some of the largest religious institutions, for they're not religiously oriented properties, are still not taxed. That's a lot of revenue for the state of Maryland.
It is. I mean, and Otis talked about zero-based budgeting. I mean, you have to look at the entire tax structure to see what is fair and what is not fair for everybody. You know, if it were up to me, we'd have, you know, one fair tax structure for everybody. We're not going to have, you know,
Kathy Pugh.
Wow. Brian Griffin agreeing with Catherine Pugh.
But yeah, you have to take a look at these things and see what, you know, what is fair and what, you know, what is equitable.
I'm only doing that because we're out of time.
We're out of
time. Brian, great to have you on the show. Will
great.
You come back?
Oh, absolutely. RedMaryland.blogspot.com, by the way.
Otis Rowley.
Great job.
I would love to come back. Thanks for having me.
And you are CentralMaryland.org.
Correct.
And Anthony McCarthy.
Great to be with you.
Always good to have you.
All day, Mark.
Thank you,
we've
buddy.
Been together.
It's been great.
It's been good.
Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for calling in and creating, helping a show be what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite welcomes the new decade with its second annual Breakthroughs issue, highlighting 10 simple ideas that could change the city. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We won't be long alone for long. We engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Marianne Amos. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast this show, hear it again, or visit any of our new shows you haven't heard here on the air, go to steinershow.org on the web. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MICU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.